Are we ready to start yet, y'all? No.
Doug's on too.
He's on? Okay. Okay, so we had, Doug, maybe you want to just reiterate the questions, and we'll go over them, and then we'll hopefully resolve them now that we had some time to look over the material. So what were the specific questions you had regarding idolatry?
Well, the question was, what if the one of the 613 commandments is not to make a human figure, but if Noahides are prohibited against idolatry, and how far did that go in the practical? It seems that if you follow through to the 613, and they're not supposed to make a human figure, but there's nothing in the 613 about making an animal figure, and there doesn't seem to be anything in the 613 about making an image of the sun and the moon and the stars. If those are rabbinic commandments, then they wouldn't devolve upon a Noahide. And so we're trying to just get a clear understanding of the source of what we're supposed to do and why we're supposed to do it, or not do it.
Well, let me just ask you a separate thing. You just mentioned that if it's rabbinic, it won't devolve upon a Noahide. Is that true about any rabbinic, even if it's a rabbinic law within one of the seven Noahides?
To the best of my knowledge, there is no rabbinic law that's part of the seven. And Rabbi Chait, if I understood him correctly, had the following argument. The rabbinic commandments, first of all, he said the Noahides are not responsible for rabbinic commandments because rabbinic commandments were developed in order to keep the system together, and the Noahides have no responsibility to keep the system. But further, rabbinic commandments come because of a single commandment in the Torah. So they're all subsumed, if you will, under one of the 613. And so since Noahides are allowed to take on certain of the 613, you can't take on, I guess, part of it. So if they were going to do that, a Noahide would have to take on all the rabbinic commandments or none of them.
Understood. That's a good point.
And this came up over a question about Pesach, about what things in the Seder a Noahide could actually do. And it turns out apparently that part of the Seder is Torah commandments and part of it is rabbinic commandments. And so the part that was rabbinic they couldn't do, but the part that was Torah commandments they could do.
Understood. But we should clarify between a rabbinic law, which is not one of the 613, but is there to protect the 613. And like you're saying, so that's a separate law to follow the rabbinic. That's actually, I think, next week's Parsha and Shoftim. I think it's Deuteronomy in 17:11, where it says that in accordance with the Torah that they teach you. So it's talking about the rabbis. So that's one idea, that you have the 613 as a body of law, and then you have all the thousands of rabbinic enactments, or hundreds, whatever. So that's separate. But how do we understand when the rabbis in the Talmud are defining what the actual Torah law is? That's not considered rabbinic. Meaning it's when they add on a safeguard, that would be rabbinic. For example, if they tell you that you can't, so the Torah law, for example, is that you can't uproot, you can't plow on the Sabbath. That's one of the 39 forms of work that are prohibited from the Torah for the Sabbath. So the rabbis, they also said you can't ride a horse. Why? Because you may break off a branch, which is like an act, it's a derivative of plowing. You're uprooting something from the ground, even though not from the ground, but from the tree. So you're now going to break off a branch in order to hit the horse, in order to, you know, get it to go faster. So riding the horse was prohibited, but that's a rabbinic law, because that's really not the law of plowing. So you can see how they made a safeguard. they also said don't swim on the Sabbath. Because even though swimming is not prohibited, but then you may get tired, and then you'll tie together some logs to use as a raft, and this way you can float on it and rest a little bit. And building a raft would be one of the Torah laws of not building on the Sabbath. So they said don't swim as a rabbinic fence to protect against that. Okay, so we see what a rabbinic law is. It's there to protect. The rabbis can only protect. They can't create anything new. So that's not something which a Noahide is obligated in. However, since the Torah is transmitted through the rabbis, so when we talk about the actual Torah laws, and certainly the seven Noahide laws, so who do we look to tell us whether those, you know, how do we define one of the seven Noahide laws? Those would be the rabbis, correct?
Agreed.
Okay, so if the rabbis are the ones that tell us how to understand the law, so therefore when they're defining idolatry, so then we can look to what they said, and that's all brought down in the Talmud. That's where all, you know, Jewish law comes from. So that should not be looked at as rabbinic. It is the rabbis, it's the same rabbis, but they're now defining. There's at least two activities that they're involved in. Creating a rabbinic law, which is really a fence against a, like, don't swim, because then you may come to, build a raft. But if they tell you what the actual Torah law is, of idolatry, for example, so that's not rabbinic. Then they're the actual, the ones who transmit the actual, they define and transmit what Torah law is. So we can definitely look to them, and it would definitely be something that the Noahide would have to follow, because that's one of the seven Noahide laws.
Can I ask a side question?
Yeah, sure.
So the thing about swimming, I mean, that seems, the idea of, well, you can swim, but then you might be tempted to build a raft, so we'll just prohibit swimming. That seems really kind of far-fetched. And you could take that kind of reasoning and prohibit just about anything because, well, you know, if you did this, you might be tempted to do that. So, you know, you should really just sit at home and not move.
No, they can't go that way. See, that's part of the parameters. They can't go that far. They're only allowed to go one step, meaning they can only build a fence against a Torah law. But they can't build a fence against the, like, for example, they can't say, well, you shouldn't put on a bathing suit because maybe you'll come to swim because maybe you'll come to build a raft. That they're not allowed to do. See, the Torah has that limitation on them. They're only allowed to...
Right. Okay, I hear that point, but it almost seems like it would be, well, somebody says, gee, if you went swimming, you might get hungry, and if you got hungry, you might be tempted to eat something nearby that wasn't kosher, therefore we'll prohibit swimming. And
well, that's where the study of the Talmud is going to come in, to see exactly, I'm just giving you a very abbreviated form, but when you study Talmud, do you see exactly how they set up their laws? It's a very highly tuned structure, and it's very, very careful.
Okay, well, I don't want to get us off too far on that point. So.
At the time of the making of the Talmud, was raft making a greater activity, maybe?
It could be, yeah. Like today, you're right. In our context, it may seem a little, you know, far-fetched. And Dasha is actually writing on screen. She thought that the rabbis say that you can swim on the Sabbath if you don't squeeze out your hair and your towel. That's probably because, Dasha, they're referring to a swimming pool. And there's no possibility of making a raft in a swimming pool because you don't have... They're talking about when the law was enacted, there was, you know, you're talking about swimming in a lake. People didn't have these swimming pools. So, again, a person would have to consult their rabbi today to find out how that rabbi is going to rule in such a case.
And then I wonder almost, is it even that far-fetched? Because what if you want to blow up one of those, you know, like those floating devices to put in your pool? Isn't that sort of making a raft?
No. No. The thing already exists, and you're putting air into it. I don't think it falls under the specific categories of construction. There has to be a very specific design. For example, what would be a case? Let's say a person, the grinding. So grinding is one of the 39 forms of Torah prohibited laws on the Sabbath. But that has to be something which is for food, because grinding was ultimately for making flour. But let's say you take metal and you grind it. So there could be a rabbinic law against it, because even though it doesn't achieve the goal of flour, but the form of the action is similar. You know, you're taking larger objects and you're making the crushing them down to smaller objects. So again, each one has to be, each one has to be studied, you know, specific. Yes.
Yes, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt. But I think that question was very good when he asked about blowing up the raft. I think I think what they're referring to is we're not allowed to create on the Sabbath. In other words, if we take sticks and we tie them together, we're not allowed to make a knot on the Sabbath. We're not allowed to create something that wasn't there before. So if we're taking sticks and we are creating a raft, it didn't exist before. And in addition, we're making knots, which we're not supposed to do. But blowing up the, like a tube for a child to hold on to, I don't know about that. That's a very good question. I never asked that.
Well, there, the form, again, you'd have to study what the form of the law is. When I say form, I mean the specific details that contribute to the quote-unquote category of building. So building is not just any free for all thing that you're creating. We can't use our terms. We have to study the Talmud in depth to see what each one. And there's pages and pages in the Talmud on each one of the 39 laws. It's a tremendous study.
Right. Yeah, the 39 laws, Rabbi, are those are connected to the building of the Mishkan? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a separate thing. That's right. Separate thing.
It's separate. Okay. All right. Okay, but these are very good questions. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back.
Do the rabbis ever rescind a previous commandment because they realize it no longer is particularly applicable in the society?
It can only be done by a superior court. You can't just rescind. I mean, it has to be done by there have to be greater numbers and wisdom, I believe, are the two criteria for a subsequent ruling to reverse something. There also has to be conditions that if the rabbis make a law, it's not something which most of the people can follow. It won't take hold as really being a law. So they have to be able to assess that it's something which most of the people can follow. Otherwise, they're not allowed to do it, because then they're just standing up a stumbling block. But I don't want to get too far afield, because I want to answer your original question regarding idolatry.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thanks.
So in terms of what I found, if you find an object, your original question was regarding pictures of the sun and the moon, and then also questions about digital images. It ends up that if you find objects, that these are things that are not worshipped, they're completely permissible. So you have no problem with pictures of the sun and so on. In terms of creating the objects, we're not allowed to create them, even if it's for beautification. The only exception there was animals and plants. That we're allowed to create 2D and 3D. There's no prohibition stated both by Maimonides and the Shulchan Aruch. So if you want to make three-dimensional images for beautification, that it's completely permitted to make animals and plants. What you can't make is representations of man. All right, that we said, and Maimonides says, interesting, that is the only form that you can't make. Even for beautification, meaning if you make something for idolatry, even if it's a worm, the Talmud says. I mean, anything at all made for the sake of idolatry is prohibited, and of course you cannot benefit from it, and you can't own it. You can't have any, you know, pleasure from it. The question is whether something is not made for idolatry, it's just made for beautification. So can you make it? Can you own it? That's what it really boils down to. So when we're not talking about something made for idolatry, just made for beautification, so across the board, animals and plants are permitted, unconditionally. Yes?
I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I'm totally confused. Now, when they made the golden calf, that was an animal.
That was made for idolatry. I'm talking about there's two categories. Either you have something made for idolatry, or you have something which is not made for idolatry. So when you make something for idolatry, anything at all is prohibited. It doesn't matter what it is, a worm, a calf, a tree, a triangle, whatever it is prohibited since it was made for idolatry. Okay? Unconditionally, everything made for idolatry is prohibited. Now we're talking about when you're not making something for idolatry, you're just making it for beautification. You're not worshiping the thing. You like animals. You like trees. You want to have them around your house. So you're allowed to make three-dimensional, two-dimensional images, paintings, statues of animals and plants is permissible. Not a problem. The only thing prohibited when it comes to creating something for beautification. Keep in mind, this is not talking about making for idolatry anymore. We're done with that. Again, anything you make for idolatry, prohibited. Period. Now, let's say you're making something which is not for idolatry. That's what we're talking about now. So far, so good?
Okay, so there's a distance now. So therefore, my son and my granddaughter, they love horses.
Yeah. Let's go with the rule. We don't need examples. Let's follow the rule. The rule is, and we have to attach ourselves to the rule. If we have the rule clear, we'll know how to apply it. So you're not making something for idolatry. So animals and plants are permitted, 3D, 2D, any way you want.
That's so much clearer now. Thank you.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I was hooked on that, and I just couldn't get through it.
All right. Okay.
You
see the difference, though, right?
Yeah, now what about the elephant with the husk facing up?
If it's made...
Is that idolatry?
If you make something for good luck, that's you're not supposed to do that. That's like making an amulet. You can't do that. We don't have that in Judaism. So you don't.
And you just put it on your shelf as a figurine.
If you have it for the sake of good luck, you just said making it for good luck. That's prohibited.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Very good.
Now. Dasha is asking a question on screen. I also have a question on idolatry. Would raising your rabbi to the level of a personal messenger from God be considered idolatry? I see that a lot in our community. It seems quite wrong. Yeah, Dasha, we don't have the concept of intermediaries, Dasha. Okay? So using a rabbi and being an intermediary to God is not something which Judaism, it's not true. You know, God can hear a person anywhere. So that's not something which we do. All right? You're also asking about dolls. So that's a good question, a doll. Can a person make a doll or buy a doll? Because are you making the form of a person for the sake of idolatry? No. Are you making the form of a person for beauty? Yeah, it's a toy for your kid. The only question is, the doll isn't really a real form of a person, or is it like you're making a three-dimensional image of a cartoon character? So if you're making a three-dimensional image of a cartoon character, I can't see it as being a problem, because now you're modeling something not after a person, but after a drawing. So you're making a three-dimensional representation of a drawing. If you want to still say, well, it looks like a human, so the way to get out of that is not to make a complete 3D image. So leave out a nose, or leave out an ear, then you'd have no problem. Okay? And that's only creating them. It would seem to be that you find them, it's not a problem at all. Because even if you find statues that were worshipped, the Shulchan Aruch says, you find statues that were worshipped but they were broken, meaning that the idolaters now abandoned them because they saw they were useless, so they threw them out. So those are permissible. So if something which used to be an idol and now people disavow their value, and those are permissible, so certainly an object that never was an idol would be permissible. All right, so having and buying dolls and things of that nature is completely no problem. Making it would seem to be, a question. But again, if you make it without being a full form, then you're okay. All right. So again.
One of my friends told me that she was going upstate to an ashram. I'm not really clear on what that is, but it's in a country. And it's something like a Buddhist kind of ritual where they pray on They pray outdoors, and they're very quiet, and I think it has to do with the trees. I am so not qualified to even explain what it is, but do you know anything about what I'm talking about, an ashram?
No. Yeah, but if it has to do with praying, and it's not part of Judaism, it's going to be prohibited.
Right, that's what I thought.
Okay. Right, to have like, you know, certain type of religious activities, you're doing it, that's like making a new religion already.
So
any type of new religious activity, that would be, you know, a prohibited thing, because now you're making a new type of a system. That's why that's, even if they have the right idea of God, but if they're making a new type of activity that's religious, then you're adding on to you're making a new religion. You're not allowed to do that.
Exactly. That's the whole application.
Okay.
Well, okay, I should write that. Thank you.
All right. So, Doug, how are we doing so far?
Great.
So far, so good. So I'm the whole thing about dolls, we're saying that's not an image of a human, that's an image of a character. And so we're okay on dolls, both to make and to have.
Yeah, but I would still qualify that and say, don't make it completely. Because the person could still say, listen, it's true you're making it after a cartoon character, but still, in essence, you're making a human type of a design, which all comes from a real person. So just to be safe, I would say just make it without a limb. Make one piece missing.
Well, okay, so let me push a little bit. To be safe means that apparently we don't know, so we're guessing.
Well, yeah, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about cartoons. It's like a new type of a category that I didn't really see from what I saw so far being addressed. It's just talking about a person. So who's to say maybe a cartoon character is considered a person? It would be, I am not ready to make a ruling on that. So
okay.
I want to make sure that...
Shulchan Aruch says for a person you would have to make it incomplete.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
Right.
But then, so just from a practical standpoint, going to Kmart and buying a Raggedy Ann doll or, you know, that kind of thing for a child to play with, that's not an issue because you're not making it.
Exactly.
Most of us don't make dolls anyway. Most of us just buy them if we have.
Yeah, so practically there's no problem. There's no problem with figurines that we buy and so on today.
Okay, and then and there's no problem buying any animals or having those.
Not at all. Those you can make. You can go so far to even make those if you want.
Okay.
So in other words, if you're buying the Raggedy Ann doll for somebody to be like her playmate or her little baby, make believe she puts it in a carriage and it's her baby, would that be considered okay?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what they do with it.
Doesn't. I mean, so Mickey Mouse or Bugs Bunny any kind of an animal.
It doesn't matter. No, animals are completely permissible to buy them or to make them. No problem.
In a figurine. So, no, a cartoon or even a physical figurine of it is okay.
Yep.
But like Doug is saying about the Raggedy Ann is like a doll which little girls will hold and make believe it's her little sister.
Again, it doesn't matter what you do with it.
Uh-huh. My next question is why. I don't understand that.
That's not the law. The law is whether or not these things are permissible to buy.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine.
It doesn't say anything that it's not permissible.
No.
Okay.
So that brings us to the sun, moon, and stars.
Right, so the sun. Mm-hmm. Right, so those things are permissible in terms of buying them. You can't make them, right? That's one of the prohibitions. In terms of making them, so it's man, you know, angels, the sun, moon, the stars, the constellations. Those are the things which are prohibited in terms of creation. And that, again, is even if you're making them just for beautification. Again, but buying them or owning them is fine. There's no problem when it comes to buying or owning. So if you like a beautiful picture and you want to buy it, great. And it's just, you know, again, making something a representation. And again, the only prohibition on man is when it's three-dimensional. That's why you're allowed. So pictures of man are fine. The stars, since we perceive them in a one-dimensional or two-dimensional plane, I should say, we really don't see them in 3D space because we don't move behind them and go in front of them. We don't experience them from different angles. We only experience them from one angle. So that one angle keeps them in a two-dimensional plane. So therefore, the representation of two-dimension means a drawing or a painting, that would also be prohibited because then we're replicating it as we experience it. Okay, now Dasha is asking a good question. What's the difference for such a, what's the reason for such a difference in attitude towards animals and plants as opposed to humans and the stars? So my friend Rabbi Roth suggested that animals and plants are bereft of any intelligence. So therefore, the rabbis didn't go so far. Meaning when, keep in mind, we're working in two categories here. When you make something for idolatry, anything is prohibited. Anything and everything is prohibited in idolatry. We're only talking now if it's not made for idolatry, it's just made for beautification. It's a nice picture, whatever it is. So there, we said animals and plants are completely permissible. And the rabbis only prohibited other things because they have intelligence. But animals and plants are removed from the realm of intelligence. So therefore, they didn't go so far and prohibit those things when you're just making them for beauty. So that would answer, Dasha, what the distinction is between plants and animals, and as opposed to humans, to angels, and so on. Now, why the sun and the moon and so on? Rabbi Roth wanted to say, because Maimonides actually had the opinion that those objects had intelligence. That was a view back then. We know this not to be true now. So I'm not going to get into how do we redefine the law, how is it going to apply now, but just to understand why there was this categorical distinction. And the reason why they had the opinion, if I recollect, is because when you look at something in motion, and if you take an inanimate object and you propel it, so there's only one type of motion that exists when you propel it, and that's called linear motion. That means straight. It goes in a perfectly straight line unless something opposes it, like the wind or a tree. So if I take a rock and I throw it, it's going to go in a perfectly straight line until it comes to rest. It may go high up vertically, and then it'll arc down to the ground. I'm not talking about the arc. I'm talking about leaving my position and going to the where it comes to rest. It would now be a perfectly straight line. Now, what they had the question was back then was, well, the planets and the spheres, they go, they rotate around, they revolve around a center, like the moon revolves around the sun, the Earth. Right? We're not talking about the rotation on its axis, because even a rock you could spin, or like a toy, a top, you could spin it with a string and it'll rotate on its axis. So that was not a problem. That, of course, that can apply to an inanimate object. But if I throw an object and I see it start circling around, I throw it like straight, and then it curves to the left, and it goes behind me, and it goes around again, and it's like I'm sort of like the sun, and the object is a planet. So that would be something which we have to say, that object is no longer inanimate. That object is moving in a circle because it must have intelligence. It must have the will to go in that way, because naturally, motion has to be a straight path. So this is how the previous generations explained they didn't have the concept of the gravity that was pulling at such a distance and it could still affect. So when they saw all the planets going around the sun and they saw other things, or the moon going around the Earth, they concluded there must be some intelligence that's driving that motion, because that's not a linear motion. Linear motion happens when the object has no intelligence. It's inanimate, and something else is affecting it and putting it into motion. So that's perhaps why they viewed the creation of the sun, the moon, the stars, and so on. That could be one reason why that was grouped together with man and angels, because those things have intelligence. Even though you're not making it for idolatrous purposes, but still they wanted to guard against it. So the rabbis were allowed to make that. So they said, things that have intelligence, even if you're making it for beautification, it would be prohibited. I mean, another reason could also be because those were very popular. People normally would make, in those days, the sun and the moon were very popular deities. So it could be those did have that type of a status where the odds are you find a statue of a sun or a moon because people were worshiping it. So it could be. So it's a long answer to your question, Dasha, but that could be why. There's one third possibility, which is just, interesting. And that is that the man, man and the sun and the moon and the stars and the angels, when they become an object that you create, you're creating the specific man, meaning John or Sarah, whatever it is. The sun, there's only one sun. The moon, there's only one moon. The same thing with all the constellations, and the same thing with the angels. You're going to make an angel that has a certain form that maybe depicts a biblical account. However, when you make a plant or you make an animal, you're not making the specific animal, because all animals have the same exact features. You'd be hard-pressed to take, 10 zebras from the wild and make a distinction between them, being that they're all the same size. They all have the same face. They all have the same look. Same thing with maple trees. You take 10 maple trees, you can't pick out one over the other. So, and since idolatry is really the attachment to like specific unique qualities, so therefore, perhaps that's also why, or perhaps another explanation, why animals and plants were left out of this secondary prohibition in terms of making something just for beauty. Of course, making something for idolatry, everything is prohibited. I don't care if it's a plant or a worm or anything in between. But when you're not talking about making something for idolatry, you're just talking about making something for beautification, so it has to fall under some sort of category that it's going to be used for idolatry. Now, an animal, it's no different one animal from the next. So there's no unique quality it offers the human psyche that satisfies the need. Oh, this thing is now going to have a protective quality. What do you mean, one zebra over another zebra? No. So that's why perhaps another reason why animals and plants would be omitted. Okay.
Yes, Rabbi. There's another question I have. I know somebody who has a figurine of Moses holding the Ten Commandments. It's three-dimensional. It's very lifelike. And I'm just wondering if that is considered, that could be interpreted as idolizing Moses. The same thing with the head rabbi of the Lubavitch movement.
Well, wouldn't
you? Figurine.
I think you can answer the question already. You can answer.
Well, I said before, and I heard you, and I agree, that if it was made specifically to be an idol, then anything would be wrong, even a tree, if it was made to be an idol. But let's say the figurine is...
But I also said... One second. I also explained to you already that if you make something not for idolatry, but just for beautification, so a figure of a man is prohibited. We already said that. A figure of a man is prohibited. It doesn't matter who the man is.
I'm confused because we idolize the teachings of Moses.
Well, one second. Let's be clear. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
Again, if you make something which is not for idolatry,
yeah.
So then the only the things that are prohibited include the form of man. So you can't make a 3D image of man. The only way you can.
So therefore,
if you
figurine be out.
You can't make a figure of man. The only thing is if you leave off a limb or a thing of that nature. But if you're making a full, humanoid figure, it doesn't matter who it is.
Okay, so if it was just a figurine of the top half of Moses with his hands and no waist and no legs, he was just the top half of Moses holding the Ten Commandments.
Then that's fine. So according to one view, that's fine, according to one view.
Okay. The question I had was a child was having surgery and the mother brought Mickey Mouse, a figurine of a little doll of Mickey Mouse to stay with the little girl. And she said that Mickey Mouse is going to be here to watch over you. during the surgery, and when you wake up, you'll see Mickey Mouse. That would be creating an idol from Mickey Mouse, the way it was verbalized?
I can't answer based on that. That's not enough information for me to answer. It doesn't sound like she's just trying to comfort her. She's just trying to comfort her child. So she's not making an idol. Hello?
Okay.
All right?
Okay, thank you. Okay. I'm sorry to keep asking these questions, but I'm getting sort of off track when I hear something.
All right.
Sort of sent another
You got to think over the rules. If you think over the main categories, you'll see how to apply it to all these cases.
Right, I'm deviating. Thank you, Rabbi.
No, you're not deviating. I'm just saying that you're not applying the rule. So if you just think about the rule, then you'll be able to answer your question.
Okay, good.
So, Rabbi?
Yeah, Doug, go ahead.
So, going back to the figurine of Moses, if I bought it, then it would be okay. As long as it's not for idolatrous purposes.
Yeah. Buying it is no problem. Even a full figure.
So now let me go back to the sun, moon, and the stars. So I'm prohibited from making either a three-dimensional or a two-dimensional image of the sun, moon, stars, angels.
Right.
Okay. What about making, taking a couple of, practical applications? So you're playing Pictionary, and a common thing to do when you're drawing the sun is to make a circle with, just some little lines outside of it. Is that kind of very casual thing? I was thinking that last week we determined that there was an exception for that.
I don't recall saying the exception, but there's a way out. The way out is don't complete the circle. Do it in the corner of the pad. So this way, maybe you're drawing three quarters or one quarter of it, and then put the rays. You can still achieve the same thing. But I would not make.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't make the whole drawing of it. That we said, even a flat drawing would be prohibited.
Okay. Second question. A parent or a teacher takes some styrofoam balls and paints them yellow and white to represent the moon and the sun, and mounts them on little wire things as a mobile boat for astronomical education, for educational purposes, and as a decorative thing for a child's room. That prohibited. I thought we came up with an educational exception last week.
Yeah, the Talmud says that. The Talmud says that Rabbi Gamliel, he made them for educational purposes. How do we conclude on that? There wasn't that caveat in the Shulchan Aruch, though. So we can't make a ruling from what happened in the Talmud. So I can't answer on that. It seems to be that's still prohibited. Because even drawings... I'll see if I can go further and find if there's any case, but I didn't see that so far. So keep that as well.
Okay.
Keep that as an open question that we'll have to, I'll look up for you.
Okay. Then I guess one last question. On the digital photographs, my understanding is you could take a digital photograph of the sun, moon, and the stars. You could not print it on paper. But if you went and had someone else print it on paper, then you could take it and mount it in your house.
You mean you're instructing somebody else to do it?
Yeah, you take it to your local photo shop. Say, give me a 5x7 of this.
I don't know about that. Because again... I'm not sure if it extends to you telling somebody else. And if it is prohibited for you to do, so philosophically it's still wrong to make somebody else do it, even if they don't know about it. And even though a Noahide is not obligated in, I'm not sure. I mean, do you ever discuss with Rabbi Shade about lifting the Iver, but, leading people astray? Now, that seems to be part of the areas of perfection, that I would think that could be something which a Noahide might be obligated. I never saw that in the Talmud when we went through the different areas. Like witchcraft, one rabbi said even that the Noahide is prohibited on. or crossbreeding animals. An individual rabbi said even that the Noahide is prohibited on. But I didn't see leading people astray as being one over there. Did Rabbi Chaya ever talk about that?
I don't recall, although you're bringing up exactly the point that was troubling me, because it would seem that if I went to somebody else and asked them to print it, then I'm saying to them, you go violate the law so that I don't have to. And since they're under the law, even though they may not know it, then that would seem to be problematic.
Right. So we're on the same thinking. That's good. Yeah, that would seem to be a question. I wouldn't do it. I mean, until I know for sure that educationally it's okay. But if you don't have that educational out and you just want to have a beautiful picture, so now you're back to the original problem that you can't do it in 2D in terms of creating it. Again, owning it, buying it, that's fine.
So that brings up then one more question, which is the Jewish people are prohibited on these things, presumably. And so does that mean, going back to the point we were just discussing, that a science class in a Jewish school that uses any textbook that has pictures of the sun, moon, and the stars is basically benefiting from someone who violated that law. Yet, clearly, they have to teach those things.
Right.
So it seems like a little bit of a weird catch-22.
Right, I hear what you're saying. Well, again, the Torah says openly, the Shulchan Aruch says openly, if we had an idol, and then the idolaters disavowed it, they saw it really didn't work, you know, surprise, surprise, and they threw it out, and you saw broken pieces of it, you could now take it as a Jew and benefit from it. So there's no problem benefiting from something which used to be an idol. Certainly there's no problem benefiting from books that were made for educational purposes about how nature works. So there is no problem there. Making it, you know, certainly the idol was, you know, the idol was made, you know, as a, in a prohibitive, you can't make an idol. So when the idolaters made the idol, of course they were prohibiting, you know, they were going against, they're violating the Torah. But that doesn't matter in terms of now that it's been disavowed as an idol, now it's permissible for me to use it and benefit from it. I see broken pieces of an old gold idol, I can now take it and sell it. I can benefit from those because it no longer has the status of idol. So we have to make sure that we separate between what the person did, whether they, you know, did a violation or not, and now whether what I'm supposed to, you know, what can I do with this that I found. So you should feel that there's a problem that I'm, you know, now in a yeshiva, a Hebrew school, and I've got books here that I'm going out and buying so, you know, all the students can learn about the solar system. It's completely permissible because these books were actually made for educational purposes. So it's, you know, further removed from even being idolatry.
So, but just to carry that a step further, if the entire world followed seven Noahide laws, and this one in particular, we would have no astronomy books to study, at least with pictures.
Unless we find that the educational purpose, like, you know, Rabbi Gamliel, that made it fine.
Right.
I mean, again, it would seem to be if he did it, it is fine. And he's not going to, he had the law. It's just that I want to be careful that make sure that that's what the Shulchan Aruch, because that's where we have to go. We have to be true. If it's in the Shulchan Aruch, good. If it's not, then we can't do it. So,
yeah, I hear you. Okay.
Even Maimonides, he said unconditionally drawing the planets and all is not permissible. He didn't say over there, but for educational purposes, it's all right. So that is a good question. Why did Maimonides make that caveat? Why didn't he make that condition? Dasha, you're asking if a person made a picture, or they took a picture and accidentally the sun was in it. Well, you're not saying, again, printing it out would be the problem. Doesn't matter how the sun got into the image, whether it was accidental or not. And is there a difference between cartoon-style pictures of it? No, I wouldn't say so. I would say at this point, we just treat the, you know, person makes a cartoon image of the sun. It's still representing the sun, so they shouldn't draw it. Okay. Rivka, how are the questions? Are you clear on what we said so far?
I just got confused with the astronomy questions. In other words, if we're in a class and we're learning about the distance that Pluto is from Earth, or that the Sun is from Earth, or the Moon, or so on, we're not allowed to study that? We're not allowed to go to the planetarium in New York and see all this? I mean, we're not doing it as...
No, that's not making it. That's not a creation. That's an act of reading or viewing. You could do that. You can even own those things. We're only talking about creation. We're only talking about either drawing or making it 3D. That's the only thing which is prohibited on these things. Again, because these are not they're not used for idolatry. So the only prohibition is to draw them and to make them. But to own them, no problem. To go see them and read books about them, to buy books about them, not a problem at all.
Yes, if you have a globe of the Earth, you have a, you know, the it's three-dimensional, you could turn it, you can, you know, it's spin.
Yeah, again,
and you know,
it's only only the creation of it and only the drawing of it is prohibited. That means buying it, owning it, interacting with it is fine.
So the creation of it, I don't follow. In other words, if it was a school project to make a globe.
It doesn't matter what the project is.
As long as it's not used for idolatry, right?
Again, we're talking only when it's not used for idolatry. Now, once we say our discussion is limited, just, you know, anything but idolatrous use, so then the only prohibition is to make it. Doesn't matter if you're making it on a drawing or you're making it in a 3D. So only making it is prohibited. Everything else is permissible.
Okay, so if you buy it from a store, you didn't make it.
That's
if
right.
You're using it. That's
you're fine. You could use it. You could buy it. You could use it. You could paint it. You could do whatever you want. You're not making the actual object. So once you're not making it, so then everything else is permissible. Buying it, owning it, using it, no problem.
If I took a ball and I painted on the ball the Earth and the Europe and the states and the waters and everything else, am I creating?
Okay, you know, let's
by doing that.
Let's leave the painting out. Maybe that's not a good case. Let's just say buying the book or going to the museum, like you asked. That's all permissible. You're not making it.
Okay. And buying the globe is okay too. Buying one to teach a child.
Yeah, because you're not making it.
You're not making it. Okay. All right. The key is you're not making it.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I keep getting stuck on these things.
Okay. No problem.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else? Any questions or comments?
Well, I have a problem or a confusion. If we can't commission somebody to make something, when we buy something that's already made, aren't we creating the idea that there's a demand for it, and so they're going to make another one to fill that slot for the next customer, and so we have become sort of let somebody make a thing?
No, it doesn't go. The prohibition doesn't go that far. It doesn't matter that you're creating a demand. You are not creating the object. That's all.
That was a good question. Indirectly, you're creating a need for it, though, right?
You're not creating the object. You got to use the categories of Torah law, and the category is you cannot make it. That is it.
Okay.
Very important. We study. We're really true to what the laws and the parameters are. We can't, deviate.
Okay.
So, in terms of just some insight from Maimonides. So it is interesting that the way he categorizes his laws is very significant. And, for example, he says that when you're not making something for idolatry, you're making it just for beauty's sake. So then he says man alone is prohibited. Now, the only problem is that in the next law, he talks about a signet ring with the form of man on it, or the sun and the moon, the stars, the angels. And he says these two are prohibited. But he just said in the previous law that man alone is prohibited in terms of making something for the sake of beauty. Meaning, again, we're done with the discussion about making something for idolatry purposes. Now, if he was making something for beauty's sake, so Maimonides says it's only man alone that has the prohibition. So how can he go on to the next law and said, and also the sun, moon, stars? Now, let me just take Tina's question. She has a line. You're confused about what we said in the beginning of class. So no one is not obligated to follow rabbinic law. Right. In terms of rabbinic law that is protecting a Jewish law, so like not going swimming on a Sabbath because maybe you'll get tired and you'll build a raft. So building is prohibited. So therefore, the rabbis also said they set up a new rabbinic law of not to swim. So that is not something, like Doug said, you're not, a Noahide is not obligated to follow the rabbinic laws. Unless he decides he's going to do all of them, because Noahide can take on pretty much all the other laws. But if he's not taking on the rabbinic laws, he can't take it on. But we're saying there's another thing the rabbis do. Not only do the rabbis make up new rabbinic protections of the Torah laws, again, there's two sets of laws. Torah laws, which means which came from God's words, and then rabbinic laws, which the rabbis were endorsed to create as fences. That's one thing the rabbis do. They make protective devices to the Torah law. Okay? But they also do another thing. They tell us what the Torah laws are. So the rabbis are determining what idolatry is, and idolatry is a Noahide law, so you have to follow the rabbis in terms of their definition of idolatry. So that you have to follow as a Noahide. And then you're writing afterwards, so in regards to idolatry, if rabbis tell us we shouldn't go to church, would that be rabbinic? No, exactly. So if the rabbis tell you that idolatry means X, Y, and Z, that you have to follow them, because they are the ones that are interpreting what the Torah law is. So in that respect, they're not making a rabbinic law. They're telling you what the Torah law is, okay? So you should be clear on that. And whenever you have a question, of course, you need to speak to a rabbi to find out, is this a rabbinic law or is this a Torah law that the rabbis are merely expressing? Okay. So to go back to our question, so how could it be that Maimonides first, in one breath, he says, and this is the laws of Avodas Chochav, the laws of idol worship, stall worship, and it's 3:9. Chapter 3, Law 9, he says that, man can't, actually, the law, I believe, Law 10. He says man is the only thing that you can't make for beauty. That's the only thing. So if he said that man is the only thing that you can't make for beauty, so how can he say in Law 11, in 3:11, that, and similarly, you can't make the star, the moon, and so on. So, I think there might be an interesting thing here, is that, Interestingly, when he talks about the prohibition to make man, even for beautification, so why doesn't he include in that very law the case of a signet ring that they used to have as the king's seal, so they'd have the image of the king? But if the image was raised on his ring, so the ring would be prohibited, because even though it's not for idolatrous purposes, but it's the form of man on a ring. So why does the Rambam, why does Maimonides separate that when he's talking about the laws of making man? He should be in the same breath. He should have said, you can't make the forms of man for beauty. And underneath this category would also be signet rings that have human figurines on them. But he doesn't. He puts that together when he groups and he says that the stars, the moon, the sun, and the constellations, and angels, those are also prohibited from being made, even for beautification. So I think perhaps we have a new category here, and that is that there's two areas in terms of replication. There's replication in its true form when I make a 5'11" statue of a man. So even though it's not for idolatry, since it's only for beauty's sake, it's really not prohibited in terms of idolatry, but it's still prohibited by the rabbis in terms of a protective device that people shouldn't be led astray. By looking at it, they'll think that I'm making this for idolatry purposes. So that's a rabbinic law. But that's because it's a true replication of man. I'm making it the same size, all the limbs, so it looks just like him. Which is not the case with the image of a man on a ring, because it's very small. That's not a real... You lost a major parameter that really is part of what true replication is. True replication is you've got every feature, height, width, you know, the size, the features, all the features are there. So if I remove one of those parameters, meaning size, so now it's not a real replication anymore. So therefore, Maimonides does not put the prohibition of a signet ring with a human figure in the same law when he talks about the full-size figure. He puts that together with the prohibition about the stars and the sun and all. Why? Because, just like the Talmud says, Abaya gave an answer why Rabbi Gamliel, the first answer that, you know, Rabbi Gamliel, it was given to defend Rabbi Gamliel, why he was able to have images of the sun and the moon, it wasn't the answer because he's using them for educational purposes. The first answer the Talmud gives, and I think it's in Rosh Hashanah 24a is where we were taking it from. So the first answer that Abaye comes in and defends Rabbi Gamliel is that it's impossible to make a replication of the sun and the moon. So therefore, there was no prohibition for Rabbi Gamliel to make these drawings. But what does he mean it's impossible? And anything which is impossible to replicate, there's no prohibition. I think it just means the sheer magnitude, the size, you can't replicate the sun and the moon. It's impossible. They're too huge. And this would be very much in consonance. It would really support Maimonides. And also the angels. Angels are something which are not physical. So when you make a physical representation of angels, it's not a true replication anymore. So Maimonides very wisely categorized two different types of replication. There's replication which is accurate. That's only one thing, a human. Because that is the only thing with intelligence that you could make a true replication of. There's nothing else that has intelligence that you can make a replication of. A real true size with all its parameters. And since animals and plants don't have intelligence, there's no problem whatsoever. So man is the only thing. Oh, but what about angels and what they used to think, the spheres and the stars? They thought that those things had intelligence too. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Since those things you can't make as a true replication, meaning you can't make the sun, the moon, the stars because of the sheer size. Or if you make a miniature of man, that's not a true replication. Or if you make an image of the angels, angels are not physical. So anything that you try to depict an angel as is false. So therefore, he groups those together in the secondary law. And he says, nonetheless, there's still a prohibition, but the prohibition can't be grouped together with making a full-size figure of man. Because a full-size figure of man, that's a replication that's accurate. And my mind is very clear on how he thinks. So he says, that's the one thing you can't make, even though it's not for idolatry, but since it's an accurate replication, that's the only thing that belongs to that category. What about things that you try to replicate, but they're inaccurate replications? That's the stars and the moon, because they're too big. Or the angels, because you can't make a physical form of an angel. Angels are not physical. Or a miniature of man that's on a signet ring. Now we understand very well how Maimonides formulates, and he puts into a separate law those things. So I want you to see that just to appreciate how Maimonides was thinking and how he structured the law.
Rabbi?
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
In the synagogue, we see the two little, they look like babies with wings, they're little angels, the cherubim. They're on either side of the Aaron. Also, we see, in certain instances, we see two lions on either side of the Ten Commandments. They're not made as that we should idol, that make it like an idol worship. They're to represent the holiness of God. Is that true?
No. The animals are just made there for beauty. But I've never seen where they had child figures. That would be, child figures, again, if it's a drawing, it's fine, but it can't be a sculpture. If it's a full sculpture. Again, anything three-dimensional of man, you cannot make if it's completely in its form. And if they do make it, it's wrong.
But we see it in the synagogue. We see it in photographs, the cherubim on either side of the Aron Kodesh.
That was something God commanded. No. That was something God told Moses to make.
Right, so that, they look like little babies. One second.
That is something which God told Moses to make. So anything that God says to Moses to make it. That was a one-time event.
Right. Okay. So that's completely out of what we're talking about.
That's right.
Aside from that. Okay. And the lions on either side of the Ten Commandments that we see very often on a plaque or on a...
So you tell me again. You could answer that. Animals, we said, are what?
Are excused.
Right. Animals are completely prohibited. No problem.
Because it's not one specific lion that we're making into an idol.
Well, for whatever reason, I gave a few theories, but the law is that you could make in 2D or 3D animals and plants. No problem.
Yeah. All right.
All right, any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Rabbi. This has really been helpful.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for asking. Okay, so I guess we'll wrap it up here, and we'll pick it up next week. We'll go back to Kohelis, and we're up to, I think, 15, 7:15. So if you want to take a look, that's what we'll pick up next week.
Beautiful.
All right, so
thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure. All right, so I'll put this one online. I'm not going to put last week's online because I don't think we had anything conclusive. So I'll post this one online. So this, if anybody missed anything, you can go over it. And again, any questions during the week, you know, please be in touch.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, and you have a great week.
Thanks, you too. Everybody.
Okay.
Be well, everybody. Okay.
Take care.